This Could Be the Year for the Real Thing. Written by Daisies and Briars. Narrated by Rhea 314. For Devil with a Bird Dress and ITPE 2024. Rating Teen and Up Audiences, No Archive Warning Supply. Relationships, Maddie Buckley / Howie Chimney Han. Howie Chimney Han and Henrietta Hen Wilson. 1. Howard Han is sort of used to bad luck, lonely nights, and hard work. Somewhere between all that is enough good to make it feel worth it. Most of the time. But that doesn't mean it isn't taxing. The most he can say, over the past decade since his brother in all but blood died, is that two primary good things have happened. He met Henrietta Wilson, and their horrible racist, sexist scumbag of a fire captain had to leave. For the whole horrible racist, sexist scumbag stuff. But given that Howard, Chimney, had to put up with 5 years of his shit, and still has to work alongside his two protégés, it still leaves a mark. But at least he has Hen. Today he has Hen a little more scrupulously than he might have hoped. She's never one to neglect her duties as best friend, even when Chimney is feeling especially stubborn about accepting her attentiveness. It's a blustery day in mid-December. Chimney's mood is somewhat congruent with the weather, and not at all in keeping with the holiday cheer around in the shopping mall around him. There are 3 simple reasons for this. 1. Their ancient near-retirement captain of the month, Wallen, is yet one of the many who seems to think DeLuca and Kinnard are more capable than Hen and Chim. 2. He's a month out from another breakup from a relationship that ultimately went nowhere. And 3, most upsetting, it's the anniversary of his mother's death, which, of course, Hen knows. Needless to say, he's feeling a little down, a little lonely. He really doesn't want to talk about it. "I'm just saying," Hen whispers to him, as they push the gurney into the mall, where they've been called to the scene of Santa, who has apparently been crushed by his own North Pole display. "You can spend the holidays with Karen and I. It's not too late to just say yes." "You have Karen's parents coming," Chimney reminds her. "I don't want to be in the way." "You're never in the way, Chim," Hen chides. "Except maybe your own." Chimney frowns. What the hell does that mean? "I'll think about it," he says, mostly to placate her. "I just hate seeing you so down, Chim," Hen sighs. He shrugs, shoulders only lifting a little under the weight of his med bag. "I'll be okay, Hen. Always am." They make their way through the mall to the open corridor that's been designated as Santa's Village. It kind of looks like a farce, like a Will Ferrell movie made real. The large wooden workshop structure has collapsed forward into the large plush red chair. Santa himself is unconscious, pinned under the weight of the display to his seat. A woman in civilian's clothing, perhaps the one who had called 911, is standing with one of the costumed elves. It looks like she's checking Santa's vitals as best she can. Captain Wallen instructs DeLuca and Kinnard to begin working on safely removing the fallen structure, while Hen and Chim head over to the unconscious Santa. As they get closer, Chimney is momentarily and somewhat embarrassingly distracted by the civilian helping. It's just that she's gorgeous. The kind of gorgeous that takes his breath away. Big, glittery brown eyes, long dark waves, a truly kind face. And she's getting blood all over manicured nails and a pretty festive green sweater as she helps. Who is this woman? "Oh good, you're here," she says, as Hen and Chimney approach. "His pulse is stable, but I'm concerned about pneumothorax." "Are you a doctor?" Hen asks, putting on her gloves and stepping into the woman's spot to examine the victim. "No," the woman says modestly. "Just a former ER nurse." "Nothing just about that," Chimney tells her. "Thank you for helping." She shrugs. "The least I could do, really." The woman watches as Hen and Chim do their work, stabilizing Santa as DeLuca and Kinnard free him from the collapsed wooden village display. "I think you're right about that collapsed lung," Hen says, listening to his breathing. "Good catch." "Seen enough of them," she shrugs. Chim doesn't know why the specificity of the diagnosis and the modesty with which she claims it are attractive to him. But they are? Like, yeah, this woman knows she's good. Competent, confident, no need to brag. Competence is one thing, though, that Chim might currently be appearing to lack, given how much she's distracting him. He blinks hard, turns his head from her, and focuses on the man having the literal medical emergency. Priorities, Chimney. He gets into the groove of the rescue and tries to forget about her. Later, when he is freed and they're rolling him on the gurney out of the mall, he turns his head back and sees her watching after them. There's a strange, wistful expression in her eyes. Chim swallows and looks away. "Who do you think she is?" Chim asks later, driving back to the station from the hospital. "Who? The trauma surgeon?" Hen asks. "I think that was Dr. Wen." "No," Chim shakes his head. "The woman at the call. The one who helped." Hen snorts. "I think she is exactly what she said. A former nurse who stepped in to help. An altruistic bystander. Why?" "I don't know," Chim admits. "There was something about her." "A pretty face?" Hen assumes. "Expensive clothes?" "No," Chim protests. "None of that. Just something special." "Hmm. Well, then you sort of blew your chances of seeing her again," Hen informs him, as if he didn't already know. "Should have asked for her number." "While Santa Claus was dying and she was covered in his blood?" "Oh, please, Santa will be fine." Hen waves a dismissive hand. "But who knows? Maybe fate will intervene and you'll bump into her again." 2. Fate does intervene, just not in the ways Chim might expect. It's a two-pronged day of surprises. They have a shift the day after Christmas. Christmas, which Chim did end up spending alone. He didn't feel right about going to Hen's, and he didn't feel right about intruding on the Lees. So he just told each party he was going to the others. It was kind of shit. Not that he'll say that to anyone. The point is, they're on shift. It's the 26th day of December. They get called to a kitchen fire in Beverly Hills. Nothing serious. A kid trying to make fancy vegan gluten-free cookies while her parents obviously were not supervising. No one is hurt. But that's where Chimney sees her again. On a Christmas card, of all things. He physically has to stop in front of the mantel place where it's displayed. A glossy photo card type of thing of two older white people with their two adult children. "Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays from the Buckleys," it reads. "Wishing you all the best in 2017 from Philip, Margaret, Maddie, and Evan." Whoa. Whoa. She has a name, Maddie Buckley. And from the distant way they're all sitting in the portrait, not touching, that is certainly her younger brother, not her younger husband. Yikes. Now that he looks closer at them, neither Maddie nor Evan looks especially happy to be there. They're all dressed in expensive clothing, hair styled. This is a very, special Christmas card. They look rich. Beverly Hills rich. He wonders why a rich Hollywood heiress type would be working as an ER nurse. "Han, what's the holdup?" DeLuca calls when Chim lingers, staring at the Christmas card. "Be right there," Chim replies, distracted. He walks away from the Christmas card, determined to forget about it. Of course, he doesn't. He Googles them later that day, during some downtime at the station. He shouldn't. It makes him feel creepy, but he does it anyway. He doesn't Google Maddie. He'd like to make this clear. Just her parents. Really, just her father. He, as it turns out, is the primary owner and stakeholder in a company called Castle Restaurant Group. He and another partner own a series of fine dining, really upscale places, around the state, primarily Los Angeles. Jim searches through them. They're the kind of places frequented by celebrities, athletes, pop stars, real housewives. Yeah, these people have money. Jim locks his phone and puts it away. There's no point thinking about her. Not that he gets much of a chance anyway. 20 minutes later, Captain Wallen sits them down and tells them he's leaving. After their next four off, on New Year's Eve, a new captain will be starting, some guy called Nash out of Minnesota. Jim has given up hoping they'll be good. The least he can hope for is that this one isn't another Gerard. 3. If he had any chance of forgetting about her, those chances are dashed on December 29th. Chimney is off work, making a pretty run-of-the-mill grocery trip, when he runs into her again. What are the damn chances? Jim likes going to a supermarket right beside a Portuguese bakery. It's a bit out of the way, but the bakery makes it all worth it. The bread and pastries are truly beyond compare. Plus, it always makes Hen smile when he brings her an egg tart at the beginning of a shift. It is at this bakery, with Jim's groceries sitting in the car, that he runs into Maddie. He is halfway through placing an order when she walks into the shop, the bell on the door chiming to announce her arrival. Jim glances over his shoulder, nothing more than compulsory curiosity. He does a double take when he realizes it's her, nearly dropping his debit card onto the floor. Maddie is dressed in simple jeans and a powder blue sweater. She looks soft and striking all at once. "Oh," Maddie exclaims, looking at him. "I know you." Jim blinks. "You do?" As if he doesn't know exactly what she's talking about. He's just floored that she recognized him. "You're the paramedic at the mall." "Yes," Jim confirms. "With Santa. People call me Chimney." "I'm Maddie. And is Santa okay?" Maddie asks. "Well, we don't get follow-ups," Jim admits. "But he was stable when we left him." "Oh, good," Maddie smiles. It's such a kind smile. "That's good to hear." The clerk at the counter clears her throat, signaling to Jim that he's holding up the process. "Right, sorry," he mutters. He looks back at Maddie. "One sec." Maddie nods. Chimney turns back to the clerk and finishes his order as quickly as possible. During this time, Maddie walks a bit closer to him. "You've been here before?" she asks. "Oh, often," Chim answers, delighted in her decision to continue their conversation. "My friend, the other paramedic you met, and I are completely obsessed with egg tarts." "Hmm," Maddie thinks. "I'm not sure I've ever tried an egg tart." "Well, I just ordered a half dozen," Jim suggests. "Feel free to try one." "Really?" Maddie asks. "That's very kind." Jim shrugs. "The bakery is paying me an advertising bonus on the side." Maddie laughs. It's a beautiful sound, he thinks. "Well, in that case, I'll take you up on it." "Good," Jim smiles. He has never liked Portuguese egg tarts as much as he does at this moment. Thank God for egg tarts. They chat while Jim waits for his order. "I'm looking for something for my brother," she admits. "His flight is landing this evening, and I wanted something sweet to surprise him. He's a sucker for pastries." "Oh, well, you came to the right spot. Been a while since you've seen him," Jim guesses. She nods. "He's been in Peru. He came home for Thanksgiving, and our parents convinced him to come back more permanently." "Peru?" Jim asks. "Wow." "Hmm." Maddie hums in agreement. "I think he just wanted somewhere fun and far away." There's a sadness in her tone that makes Jim's stomach tight. You know, he says, I've never actually met my little brother. Her eyes widen. What? How is that? Damn, he shouldn't have said anything. He was just trying to relate, but now he has to actually explain, which takes one of two shapes in practice. Either it sounds like he's trauma dumping, or it sounds like he's way too casual about a pretty sad story. Well, my parents immigrated here from Korea, Chim says carefully. Then when my ma died, my dad moved back, remarried, had another son. And I haven't seen there. He hasn't been here, so... It sounds so cold, so callous. But it is. It's not Chim's fault. He's not the cold and callous one. Maddie's reaction is not judgment. She gives him a sympathetic look, like on some level she gets it. That must be difficult for you, she says. It can be, Chim admits. He wants to change the topic. But you and your brother must be close.
We were, Maddie nods. I'd like to be again, now that we're both back in town.
Chim doesn't get a chance to ask her about what she means by that, because the clerk hands him his box of pastries, and he turns to offer her the promised egg tart.
Okay, this is amazing, Maddie says after one bite. You were right.
I know. Not to brag, but I am an excellent judge of pastry. Maddie laughs. I can see that. So, what's the verdict? Good enough for your brother?
Oh, yes, she nods. I'll put an order in. But, okay, one more question.
Is it for his number? Please let it be that. Sure, Chim says.
This might be weird, she cautions.
I'm okay with weird.
Stupid. What a stupid thing to say, damn it. What are you doing on New Year's Eve? She asks.
Chim blinks. 2 days away. I have a shift, he admits. God, he should call in sick. But it's that new captain's first day. Geez, Chim hasn't even heard what she's suggesting and he's already willing to jump through hoops.
Maddie's mouth twitches with a small disappointed frown. Well, she says, reaching into her purse. I don't know the timing of your shift or anything, but here.
She hands him a glossy cardstock invite.
My parents throw this huge New Year's Eve party every year. It's my first year going in a long time. I kind of hate them, but the food is good, and the music. Maybe if the company was better, I'd really enjoy it this year.
Chim can feel his heart beating in his sternum. You're inviting me to your parents' place, he teases. Maddie, it's only one egg tart. She scoffs and rolls her eyes.
Well, then you've got to stop offering girls egg tarts. They get ideas.
This sounds really fun, Maddie, Chim says seriously. I'd like to go. I'm just not sure about work.
Well, she shrugs, come if you can. I'll keep an eye out for you.
Okay, he smiles at her. I'll see what I can do. In hindsight, Chimney has no idea why he says it. There's no way in hell he can make it to that party. Even worse, he somehow manages to leave without getting her number. 4. Chim can't get his brain off it as he heads to work on New Year's Eve. He should have called in sick. He should have just left them in a lurch, just once. He has the staggering feeling that he's blowing a rather important shot. Work is fine. They meet the new captain, Bobby Nash. He seems okay enough. Friendly, confident, competent. He doesn't look disappointed to see Hen or Chim in his station, and that's more than Chim can say about a lot of the jackasses he's under. He seems to pay them equal regard before they have a call, and on their first call, actually watches them work and appreciates it. Chim will take it. He hopes the guy actually sticks around. Until the mid-afternoon, everything is just sort of okay. Chim wishes he wasn't here, but that's only because he has somewhere he'd rather be. It's his own damn fault. Things take a bit of a change during some downtime, with their chores done and not much going on, which will surely change as the night progresses and the parties wind up. Hen and Chim take some time to sit and chat at the kitchen table over a coffee. He tells her about running into Maddie at the bakery, the egg tart, the conversation, the party invites, all of it.
"Wow," Hen says, "you really like her."
"I really do," Chim says. "Is that crazy? I barely know her."
"I don't know," Hen sighs. "I think I knew right away with Karen, too. Even if I wouldn't admit it."
"You're welcome," Chim winks. Hen rolls her eyes, but is smiling as she does it.
"I think you need to get to know her better," Hen says. "You have such a big heart, Chim. It shouldn't go to just anyone."
That's all well and good to say when you're not the one who's alone.
"Well, that's why I should be at this party," Chim sighs. "Getting to know her better."
"What party?"
"Crap." Chim looks over his shoulder to see Saul and Tommy approaching. Saul's gaze is focused on the glossy invitation in Chim's hand.
"Oh, nothing," Chim says, tilting the invite so the copy is less visible. "Just a party I can't go to tonight."
Saul swoops in and snatches the invite from Chim's hand.
"Man, don't," Chim complains.
Saul ignores him, holding up the print for Tommy to see.
"Whoa," Tommy whistles. "Buckley. Like those Buckleys? Rich Buckleys?"
"I guess," Chim asks. "Can I have it back?"
"Oh, they're like LA socialites," Saul says. "Isn't the daughter pretty hot?"
Tommy shrugs. I don't know. Yes."
Chim grits his teeth and snatches the invitation back.
"Hey, why so pressed?" Saul asks. "You got an invitation to a classy party. That's like a miracle, right?"
"What's that supposed to mean?" Hen demands.
"Come on," Saul scoffs.
"No, I'd like you to explain it," Hen says, standing.
Chim wants to scream. It's been a decade of this shit. A fucking decade.
"Oh, you're so sensitive," Saul groans. "You read into everything."
"How can I be reading into it when I'm asking you to say what you mean?"
"What's going on here?"
Captain Nash approaches the four of them, concerned and vaguely annoyed expression on his face.
"Nothing," Tommy says quickly. "Nothing's going on."
"Is that right?"
Hen raises an eyebrow. Captain Nash, Bobby, he wants to be called Bobby, scans the four of them dubious. Chim flares with annoyance. If Saul and Tommy's bullshit gives Nash a bad impression of Hen, well then Chim will do exactly what he did when she showed up all those years ago. He'll defend her. He'll always stand up for Hen.
"Han here is just complaining about having to work on the holiday," Saul shrugs.
"Holiday is tomorrow, DeLuca," Chim fires back.
"Okay," Bobby says. "I think I see."
Chim's not sure what he thinks he sees, but if he's taking Saul's word for anything, he's wrong. But before anyone can say anything else, the alarm rings. Chim and Hen don't get to see where Bobby's thoughts lie. But Chim has dealt with this shit for long enough. He has a pretty good idea. It's a quick med call. Dislocated knee, nothing serious. Well, okay, a little serious for the knee, but that's about it. It should be entirely unremarkable, except for the fact that when they get back, Hen disappears into Bobby's office and talks to the new captain for almost an hour. This is not something that is normal for her. She usually avoids long conversations with their captains,
given how the first one treated her. Chim's not sure who initiated the interaction, but in either case, it's weird.
Isn't she gay? Saul jokes,
when enough time has passed without Hen emerging. Tommy chuckles nervously. Chim personally hopes that he gets crushed by a falling piano. When, finally, Bobby and Hen emerge from his office, Bobby looks across the upper station floor to where Chim is sitting and waves him over.
What the fuck?
Your turn, Saul mutters.
Do you ever shut the fuck up? Chim snaps.
Saul blinks, surprised. Chim doesn't wait for a response. He walks off towards Bobby's office, ready to find out whatever the hell is going on. He passes Hen by as he walks, mouthing a little, "What's happening?" to her. She winks, but says nothing, which is even more confusing.
"Take a seat, Howard," Bobby says when Chim walks into the office. He closes the door behind them.
"Please call me Chimney," Chim corrects, taking a seat.
"Okay, Chimney," Bobby nods.
He rounds the desk and sits in the chair across from Chim.
"Sorry to make it look like you're being called down to the principal's office, but I wanted to talk to you away from DeLuca and Kennard."
"No worries," Chim replies.
"You've got a really good friend in Hen," Bobby says.
Chim nods, smiling slightly.
"I know. She's the best. Best person, best paramedic, damn good firefighter, too."
Bobby smiles.
"I appreciate the loyalty between you two. It's inspiring. Probably a sign of who I want to be working with in a team setting, too."
"Thank you," Chim says. He's not entirely sure where this is going or what Hen must have said to him.
"Which is why I'm going to do something I really normally wouldn't do," Bobby says.
What do you mean?" Chim asks. He's really lost now.
"I'm going to tell you to go to that party."
Chim's jaw nearly hits the floor.
"What?"
"Go to the party. Don't waste your shot with that girl. Get her damn number."
This can't be real life, surely. What did Hen say to Captain Bobby Nash to make him behave this way?
"I'm so confused," Chim admits.
"Be back by 12:30, Bobby says. "That's when all the big calls start, in my experience. Though I'm used to snowy roads on top of drunk drivers."
12:30, Chim mumbles.
"And on that note, don't drink," Bobby says. "I really can't have you coming back to work with any alcohol in your system, okay?"
Chim nods.
"Of course, I won't."
"Cap, are you sure?"
"I'm sure," Bobby nods. "Have fun. Don't make me regret it."
Chim has to rush. He doesn't have a lot of time to go home, get clothes, and get ready. He doesn't even know if he has a proper outfit. Oh god, he has to go shopping for a nicer shirt on New Year's Eve. Hen finds him in the locker room, frantically packing his bag.
"I think I like the new captain," she says with a knowing smile.
Chim pauses for a second.
"How did you do it? What do you say to him?"
Hen shrugs.
"I just explained why I thought you deserved this chance. That's all."
"I don't deserve you," Chim says.
"That's the thing, Chim. You do." She shakes her head. "And you deserve to know whether or not you and this Maddie could be something special. So go see."
Chim grins. "Thank you, Hen. I don't say it enough, but I'd love you, you know?"
"I love you too. Now get going."
Chim's suspicions were unfortunately correct. He doesn't have the right shirt for this kind of party. Everything is either too casual or better suited for a business meeting or a funeral. Which means he's got to brave them all before he makes it to the party. He FaceTimes Hen from the menswear store he lands on, frantic and uncertain.
"I am experiencing decision paralysis," he tells her mournfully.
Do I get something colorful, neutral, pattern, no pattern? Hen, you need to help me.
As if she hasn't already helped him immensely today.
Maybe not a bold pattern until you know the crowd better, Hen advises.
Are you sure? You'd wear a pattern.
Well, I'm me.
Excellent point. He goes through the store with her, showing her potential choices. They eventually land on a crisp blue button-up, the shade of which reminds Chim of a watercolor painting of snow. It's got a subtle paisley print when he rolls the cuffs. It'll look good with the dark pants and shoes he's already got. It's wintry, but not Christmassy, which Hen says is appropriate for New Year's.
Isn't New Year's silver and gold, Chim asks, and sparkles?
I'm not sure if gold sparkles is the impression you're trying to make on night one.
Another excellent point. He buys the blue shirt.
The Buckley's Beverly Hills mansion is very square. Very white and square and modern. Everything feels neat and sleek. It feels very Beverly Hills. Very new money. But somehow not very Maddie. Though maybe he doesn't know her well enough to say. The valet parks Chim's car for him. He wonders if they notice the LAFD bag in the back stuffed with the clothes he'll need to swiftly return to reality. When he walks into the elaborately decorated party, complete with waitstaff passing out trays of drinks and food, Chim feels like he's in a strange fairy tale. Like he's the thriving entrepreneur he once dreamed of being, invited to a party to network and schmooze. Like he is the kind of son his father would have wanted. Would being at a party like this make him proud? The whole thing makes Chim feel a little dirty. A little out of place. In fact, a not insignificant part of his body is urging him to turn and walk the other way. But then he sees Maddie. He sees Maddie and he remembers why he came, why he needs to be here. Maddie is standing across the wide open foyer of her parents' home, wearing a loose, knee-length champagne-colored dress that twinkles a little when she moves. She's talking to someone, the man from the Christmas card, her little brother, the one that was in Peru. They each have a half-full flute in hand.
Champagne?
A passing server asks Chim. They must see him eyeing Maddie and her brother and assume he wants what they have.
No, thank you, Chim mumbles. They keep walking.
Chim doesn't quite know what to do. He doesn't want to interrupt Maddie's conversation, but he also doesn't have any other reason to be here or anyone else to talk to. He feels a bit like a creep, standing there staring at her. He must look entirely pathetic. After a moment, her brother notices. He taps, points towards Chim, sending Maddie's gaze in his direction. Chim stiffens a little with anxiety, but Maddie just smiles. She says something to her brother, then turns to walk towards Chim.
You made it, she beams, when they're standing a few feet apart. I wasn't sure you would.
Well, I wasn't sure I could, Chim admits, but here I am.
She smiles. I'm really glad you made it.
Me too, he says. You look fantastic.
Maddie blushes and looks down at her dress.
Well, thanks. You clean up pretty well, too.
Chim feels his cheeks heat, too. Thank you, Hen, for the brilliant shirt decisiveness. And so many other things. At that moment, Maddie's brother approaches them, a knowing smirk on his face.
Hi there, he says. Going to introduce us, Maddie?
Maddie gives him a quick, unimpressed look.
Evan, this is Chimney. Chimney, this is my brother, Evan.
Chim reaches to shake his hand. He is very tall, kind of a giant compared to his sister.
Nice to meet you, he says.
Chimney, Evan asks. Nickname I got at the fire station where I work, Chim explains. The story is not... Well, he's not going to tell it at this fancy party.
Right, you're a firefighter.
Evan grins. That's so cool. I'm jealous, man. For a moment, Chim thinks this rich kid might be making fun of him, but there's such sincerity in him. He really is jealous. It's a great career, Chim tells him. I get a lot of fulfillment from it. Wow, I'd love to ask you questions about it if you... Maddie clears her throat, cutting him off. Evan looks at her, cheeks going a little pink. I'd love to ask you another time, Evan amends. I'm just gonna go talk to someone else. Bye, guys. Bye, Evan, Maddie smiles. Nice to meet you, Chim calls as Evan strides off. He turns back to Maddie. He seems nice. He is, Maddie nods. He's a sweetheart, just enthusiastic. That's a good thing, Chim shrugs. I think so, she smiles. Well, can I give you a tour? As long as she keeps talking to him, absolutely. I love that. Maddie shows him the house, but the tour is mostly just a chance to talk. She points to rooms vaguely and asks him questions about himself. What made you want to be a firefighter? Have you always lived in Los Angeles? Do you have family out here? And he answers as best he can without getting into the nitty-gritty. A fire at a bar where I worked, actually. Made me feel sort of heroic, I guess. I moved when I was a kid, but I was born in Seoul. No blood family, not anymore. In return, Chim asks questions of his own. How does a Beverly Hills heiress end up as an ER nurse? Are you still in healthcare? This might sound like a silly question, but what's your favorite movie? She answers in turn. I spent a lot of time around nurses as a kid and wanted to feel like I was helping people. I left my job and I'm looking for something else, but I'm not sure what that will be. That's hard. Don't laugh, but maybe Moulin Rouge? Chim doesn't laugh. Do you like musicals? Yeah, she admits. I love to sing. I used to do karaoke all the time, he tells her. I think I'm okay. They keep talking until the tour is over. They keep talking until people start dancing, until Chim works up the nerve to ask her to dance. And then talking turns to dancing. Chim notices, as he rests his hands on her waist to start dancing, that she hasn't taken a moment away to chat with anyone else. She's as focused on him as he is on her, and he's never quite felt that before from anyone. They dance for several songs in a row, laughing and chatting all the way. It feels like he's known her for a long time, even though he's missing the key details of her life. The same way he hasn't shared the rougher parts of his story with her, she hasn't shared hers with him. It's not the place, after all. It's a party. It's New Year's Eve. It's time for celebrating bright things ahead, not dark things behind. Eventually, their complete focus on one another is broken. They've migrated out to the back patio, where the music and general din of people is softer. They're swapping workplace horror stories, comparing paramedic tales to ER nightmares, and laughing more than Chim has laughed in a long time. Which is strange to say, for someone who likes laughing so much. Maddie is just recounting the story of an entire bachelorette party that got brought in for heatstroke when her brother approaches with an unhappy look on his face. It was the worst sunburn I have ever seen, Maddie is saying when her eyes land on him. Evan, is everything okay? Yeah, I hate to interrupt, Evan frowns. Can I pull you away for a sec? It's Mom and Dad. Maddie's expression stiffens. Sure. Wait for me, Chimney. Of course, Chim replies. Maddie and Evan walk across the patio and engage in what appears to be a rather tense conversation. Chim tries very hard not to eavesdrop. He stares out at the glittering infinity pool and the nighttime view of the hills, marveling at where he finds himself. but when Evan raises his voice, it's hard not to hear.
Well, they can go fuck themselves, Maddie. You should do what you want. I think you've earned that much.
Jim swallows uncomfortably. He wonders what the hell that's about. He doesn't have to wonder for long. Maddie walks back over moments later, heels clicking against the tiles, brother trailing behind her.
Are you okay to hang out for a minute? She asks him. I need to go do something for my parents.
Don't worry about me, Jim shrugs. I'll be here, enjoying this incredible view.
Thank you.
She smiles apologetically.
I'll be right back, really.
Maddie walks off, back inside the house. Her brother doesn't follow her. He crosses his arms, dark navy shirt tight on his arms, and lets out a huff.
Everything okay? Jim asks.
Evan exhales heavily through his nose and makes an amused noise from his throat.
Yeah, sorry, just...
Well, whatever. My sister clearly likes you, so you should know she's the best person in the world. I just wish more people knew that.
Jim finds himself unexpectedly touched. He doesn't think of himself as a sappy guy, but hey, maybe he is. It makes him happy for Maddie. It makes him miss Kevin.
I don't know her very well, Jim admits, but she kind of gives that general vibe, I think.
Evan offers him a small smile for that.
Yeah, well, believe me, it's true.
Jim nods.
Hey, while we're waiting for her, what were those questions about firefighting you had?
Evan's eyes light up a little at that.
Oh, yeah, okay. See, at the resort I worked at in Peru, they played Backdraft all the time.
Great film, Jim interjects.
Right, well, it got me thinking.
After answering all of Evan's numerous and excited questions about firefighting, Maddie finally returns. Evan leaves them to it, clapping Jim on the shoulder and thanking him, telling Maddie, I love this guy.
Jim will accept this as a good endorsement.
All good? Jim asks after he's gone.
Maddie nods.
Sorry.
Don't be. I've monopolized all your time.
Yeah, she admits. But that's kind of why I invited you.
He smiles. Well, good. That's kind of why I wanted to come.
Her smile is brighter than the whole city skyline.
Your brother seemed worried about you, Jim says after a moment. A gentle inquiry. She can brush it aside if she wants to.
Maddie nods.
He's the less diplomatic of the two of us when it comes to our parents.
Diplomatic? Jim asks.
Maddie nods.
My parents think I can use my currently single status to help broker some better business relationships for them.
Jim's eyes bug out a little. Like a political marriage.
That sort of thing, yep.
That's crazy, he blurts.
Maddie nods slightly.
It's not what I want.
Yeah, I can see why, Jim empathizes.
They're hoping I'll choose someone business-minded to take over the company, Maddie explains. Preferably someone who's already proven and wealthy.
Well, that's definitely not Jim. Not that he's thinking about marrying her already. God, he's getting ahead of himself. Why not you or Evan? Jim asks.
They wanted me to, Maddie says. I have no interest.
And your brother?
They've never offered or asked, she frowns.
Which is their loss.
He's brilliant, just not the way they want him to be brilliant.
So that fierce loyalty works both ways.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but he may just end up a firefighter. I think everything I said just encouraged him.
Maddie laughs.
Good. That would be good for him, I think.
I think he'd avoid any of the more unpleasant bullshit anyway, Jim says.
Maddie frowns.
Like what?
Ah, well, you met my partner, Hen.
Maddie nods.
She and I aren't exactly what the old boys' club is used to, Jim explains. It can be hard. Harder for her.
Right, Maddie sighs. I know it's not the same, but a lot of female trauma medicine doctors I worked with face the same crap.
Jim nods. Yeah, I bet that comes with its own set of challenges.
Maddie opens her mouth to reply, but at that same moment, the noise inside begins to pick up. People are gathering around a screen.
Is it almost midnight already? Maddie asks.
Midnight? What? No, not so soon. That means Chim has to leave.
Oh, God, how can the night be over? He doesn't want it to end.
They still have so much to talk about. He wants to learn everything about her.
Inside, people begin to chant. 10.
Oh, no. It's really happening then. He'll have to leave.
9. 8. Maddie turns to look at Chim, bright party lights glittering in her eyes. 7. 6. She smiles at him, warm and beautiful. How can he be expected to just go back to the damn fire station after this? 5. 4. Maddie steps closer to him. 2. Wait a second. 1.
Happy New Year!
Maddie kisses him. It's gentle and sweet. Feather light at first, with her hand on his cheek, before pushing just a tiny bit further. Chim's whole body goes warm and melty, like he's sinking into the nicest bath of his entire life. He lifts a hand to the small of her back. So far, 2017 is kind of fantastic. When Maddie pulls away, Chim sighs a little. He feels like he must have cartoon heart eyes and little songbirds fluttering around his head.
Was that okay? She asks.
That was amazing, he tells her.
Good, she smiles. I thought so too.
Which kind of makes the next thing I have to say really suck, Chim sighs.
Oh, no, Maddie frowns. What? Please don't say you have a girlfriend.
No, Chim assures her. Nothing like that. Just, I have to be back to work in half an hour. Her face falls.
Oh.
I'm so sorry. I only got a few hours off to come tonight.
Well, that's okay, she says, smile returning to her face, though admittedly muted. We'll just have to pick this up another time.
Relief courses through him.
I'd love that.
Chim knows he needs to go. He's running short on time. He doesn't want to disrespect Bobby's incredible generosity by showing up late. But he can't quite help himself from stepping forward and kissing Maddie again. This time the kiss is longer and a bit more heated, more confident. He can feel the tips of her manicured nails press into the back of his shoulders a little. Chim could stay here forever. He wants to stay here forever. But he's on a curfew. He pulls away again. I really do have to go.
Maddie nods a little breathless.
I'll see you soon?
God, I hope so.
She smiles and squeezes his hand reassuringly.
Then go. Have a good rest of your shift, Chimney.
Have a good rest of your night, Maddie. And a happy new year.
Yeah, I think it is.
Chim doesn't realize for an embarrassingly long time. He doesn't realize as he's walking away from Maddie. He doesn't realize as he's waiting for the valet to bring him his car. He doesn't realize as he's hurrying back to the station. It's only after he's fully back in uniform, walking out of the locker room, that his complete and total stupidity occurs to him. After all of that, Chim didn't get Maddie's phone number. They respond to call after call after call, giving Chim almost zero time to react to his oversight. Car crashes, alcohol poisoning, one near drowning in a hot tub, it's constant. He's exhausted. Exhausted and supremely frustrated with himself. He tries to find her on social media in between calls. In the very short pockets of time they get in the engine. It's of no use. She's not on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, anything. At least not under the name Maddie Buckley. He does manage to find her brother and debates back and forth whether or not he should reach out there. Hi, Evan. It's the firefighter who so kindly let you talk his ear off. I'm very, very into your sister, but have no way of reaching her. Help me, young rich kid. You're my only hope. He's not sure that isn't a total creepy message to send, so he doesn't send it. What's wrong? Tommy asks a little tersely, when he sees Chim frowning at his phone in the back of the fire engine. Several hours off in the middle of the shift not enough for you? It's nothing, Chim mumbles. He doesn't want to talk about it, especially not with the likes of Tommy or Sal. He already feels like enough of an idiot for not getting Maddie's number. You didn't have a good time? Bobby asks from the front. No, I did, Chim assures him. I had a fantastic time. Thank you again. He really doesn't want to seem ungrateful for the bone Bobby threw him, so he tries to wipe the grimace off his face and get through the rest of the shift as best as possible. Chim finally gets a chance to talk to Hen about it, privately, somewhere around 4 in the morning. They're in the ambulance, driving back from yet another party gone wrong that resulted in a hospital transport. At least this time no one puked. Just a badly broken ankle from a drunken trampoline adventure. So you forgot to get her number, Hen says. Can't you go back? Stroll up to a gated mansion tomorrow and say, Hi, I'm the guy who kissed your daughter while you were trying to set her up with the rich hedge fund types? I don't think so, Hen. She's probably trying to find your information too, Hen tries. I hope, Chim grumbles. And hey, you're very findable on social media, Hen adds. She won't have trouble. Should I message her brother? Chim asks. Is that crazy? He was nice. Maybe wait until you've slept for all forms of communication, Hen advises. She knows you're at work anyway. She won't be expecting to hear from you. Right. Right. You're so smart. Why are you so smart? I had a nap in the bunk room while you were at the party. Damn. Yeah, a nap would make him sharper. So it's just a waiting game for now. Chim sighs. This is not helpful with the resounding feeling that he may, in fact, be a complete fool. I think so. Hen agrees. Sorry, Chim. By some stroke of fate, he's not waiting very long. When they park the ambulance in the engine bay and climb out, sore and tired, Chim is met by the sound of a strangely familiar voice. One he thinks he may just be hallucinating. You're the captain. That's so cool, he hears. That means you've been doing this forever, right? You know a lot about it? Well, yes, he hears Bobby reply. But it's actually only my first shift here at Station 118. Evan? Chim mumbles. Who? Hen asks. Maddie's brother, he clarifies. Wow, Hen exhales. Chim looks at her, bewildered. Go and fix this right this minute, she instructs. Right, what the hell is he waiting for? Chim jogs off in the direction of Evan and Bobby. Wow, Evan is saying when Chim reaches them. Firefighting in Minnesota and Los Angeles. You get like two totally different climates. That's so cool. Bobby looks tired, confused, and a little endeared. Evan, Chim calls. Evan spins around to see him. His face lights up. You, he accuses, pointing at Chim. What is your real name, man? Do you know how embarrassing it is to call the fire chief in the middle of the night looking for Chimney? Chim blanches.
You called the fire chief? Bobby asks.
Yeah, he likes one of my dad's restaurants.
Evan shrugs like it's no biggie.
It's Howard, Chim says.
Howard Hahn.
Great, Howard Hahn. You left without giving Maddie your real name or number, and she's pretty convinced it was a mistake.
It was, Chim insists.
Okay, then I'll give her a call and tell her you're not a flake and to come down here, the guy decides.
She's sent you looking for me? Chim asks.
Well, when the fire chief didn't know who you were, she tried to remember your station number, Evan explains. She could only remember the first two digits, so she took it from 110 and I started at 119.
My goodness, Bobby sighs. I'm not in St. Paul anymore.
Sorry for the disruption, Captain Nash, Evan says.
No, it's certainly been entertaining. Bobby waves a dismissive hand.
Just hang tight, okay? Evan asks Chim. I'll call Maddie.
Chim feels a small jolt of panic.
We've been getting a lot of...
He's interrupted by the ear-splitting wail of the alarm.
Calls. Chim finishes. We've been getting a lot of calls.
We gotta go, Bobby says to Chim. Sorry, Chimney.
I'll tell her you're here, Evan assures him. Go save lives or whatever.
Thanks, man, Chim says.
He turns around and heads towards the engine. As he does, he notices Tommy lurking in the background, staring at Evan, like he doesn't even hear the alarm. Evan walks past him without notice, typing something into his phone, presumably to Maddie. Chim can only hope that, with all the chaos of the night, Maddie still thinks he's worth the effort. When they get back from yet another car accident, Chim is surprised to find Maddie is waiting for him at the station. She's still wearing her dress and heels, but with a thick wool cardigan that doesn't at all match, buttoned over top for warmth. She's leaning against the locker room walls, arms crossed nervously, looking tired, when the engine pulls back into the engine bay.
Wow, Hahn, DeLuca quips when he sees her. What are you packing down there to keep her on the line?
Tommy chuckles.
Ugh, Hen groans.
Man, what the hell? Chim wrinkles his nose.
DeLuca, that is wildly inappropriate. I don't want to hear anything like that out of anyone's mouths, or there will be repercussions,
Bobby says firmly. DeLuca clamps his mouth shut with a scowl. Well, damn. So many captains before him, predominantly Gerard, would have laughed. Hell, Gerard might have been the one to say it. When Chim climbs out of the engine and approaches Maddie, he feels a wave of self-consciousness. He's exhausted, sweaty, and subsisting off coffee. He doesn't look like he did at the party, or smell like he did, probably. But when she sees him, her face breaks into a wide, albeit tired, smile. Maddie, he says, I can't believe you're just here. I can't believe you and your brother spent all that time looking for me.
Well, I have a strong feeling you're worth it, she says. But sorry if it was too much.
Chim is half convinced this has all been a very good, slightly chaotic dream.
No, he shakes his head. I had no idea how to get in contact with you again. I couldn't find you on social media.
She winces.
Yeah, that's a bit of a long story.
Well, if you'd like to tell me about it sometime, I'd like to hear it, Chim says.
Maybe over dinner?
I'd like that, she smiles. Can I give you my phone number?
Chim grins.
Please.
They exchange phone numbers, and Maddie leaves after pressing a kiss to Chim's cheek. Chim is left wondering how soon he can reasonably text her when Bobby approaches him.
It's not like this every day, is it? His new captain asks.
God, no, Chim shakes his head. It's never been like this. 6. They meet up less than a week later for dinner and drinks. Without the worry of wondering if they're on the same page, having to get back to work, or simply existing amongst the Beverly Hills well-to-do, Chim finds himself completely at ease with Maddie, like they've known each other for far longer than one party, one bakery run-in, one Mall Santa emergency, and one exhausted fire station chat. Maddie explains her situation to Chim, why he couldn't find her on social media, why her parents are desperate for her to find someone to marry. "My ex-husband was abusive," she explains to him. "He was a pretty acclaimed heart surgeon in Boston where we lived. My parents had to use money and connections to get me out of there safely. I pressed charges. He's in jail, but they consider the whole thing a scandal, an embarrassment. They'll front money for domestic violence charities in public and say I should have chosen better behind closed doors."
"Addie, I'm so sorry," Chim replies. "That's horrible on both accounts."
"Thank you," she says. "It's been hard, and I've been trying to heal. I'm grateful for the help they did give me, but they don't always help me feel like I can move forward and finally just live for myself, you know?"
Chim nods. He doesn't really know. He's never been in that position. Parental issues, though, that he's got covered. It's not just her who shares, either. Eventually, they move on from her to Chim, and he finds himself telling stories he hasn't told anyone but Hen. About Kevin, about his mom, about growing up in Korea before they moved to California. Stories that are hard to tell, but feel good to revisit all the same. And it's funny. Usually when he dates people, they want to hear firefighting stories, heroics and bravery and all that. Maybe because that's what he leads with. Hell, it's the dating site he uses. But Maddie doesn't ask about that at all. All her work-related questions for him are more him-focused, and he hadn't realized how good that would feel, either. For once, he feels like he's just being entirely himself. And someone is interested.
"I'd really love to see you again, Maddie," he tells her when their evening finally comes to an end. "Not to sound overeager, but as soon as you want, if you want."
"Not to sound overeager, but I'd like to do it again really soon, too." Maddie smiles at him. And for once, Chim has the feeling that things are going to go really, really right for him. 7. A year later, celebrating New Year's Eve looks a bit different. The 118A shift isn't working, and he isn't at a party at a mansion in Beverly Hills. Instead, Chim is at Hen's house, at a small party she and Karen are throwing. Chim is, of course, in attendance with Maddie, who he hopes to spend many, many more New Year's Eves with in the future. Evan, or Buck, as he's taken to being called since starting at the Fire Academy, is with them too. It kind of worked out great for Buck. Bobby sent DeLuca packing within a week of starting at the 118, and Kinnard transferred not long after, so there was a spot for Buck. He started at the 118 recently, and pretty much spends his days either following Bobby around like a faithful puppy or getting on his nerves. So, also like a puppy. Bobby is also at the party, which Chim will admit is a bit surprising, since he's the type so far to keep his work and personal life sort of separate. Or he's trying, anyway. For the past few months, the 118 has felt like a sort of unit. Dare he say a family? Crazy how much two key players, both arriving and leaving, can change. Really, Chim is the happiest he's been in a long time. Maybe ever. The closest thing he can compare it to were those early days in Fire Academy with Kevin, when the future was so big and bright. He feels like that, now, with Maddie. With the people around them, like the life he's always wanted is right in front of him. Howard Hahn is sort of used to bad luck, lonely nights, and hard work.
And apart from the latter, because that never stops in the LAFD, he thinks it's all behind him now. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this Podfix post. And hopefully you enjoyed this Devil with a Bird Dress. Have a happy ITPE. Thanks for listening.